Need for Speed.
You know, I loved owning my own business. I learned a lot about myself in that, and I learned both strengths and weaknesses. I found out that I'm a great salesman. I can sell anything, and I really enjoyed that, the interactions with the people, going to their homes and talking to them and learning about them and learning, listening to their story. And I absolutely loved that aspect of it. So I learned a lot about myself because I was kind of an introvert before that.
Right.
I didn't really talk to people. I didn't, unless I was drinking. That was the only way I could get out and socialize. So having been at that point, 2014, I had already been sober for 3 years. I hadn't quite learned how to socialize without alcohol. So that aspect of being a sales rep and getting into people's homes and talking to them really brought out who I was inside without needing alcohol to help me do that.
Hey guys, we'll get into the podcast in just a minute. However, I am looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show, and I am planning a road trip across America and including parts of Canada. I'll tell you more about both of these at the end of this podcast. Hello guys, and welcome to the Blue Collar Voices show. Our guest today is Matt Radford. He is a roofing consultant. In short, Matt started out as a roofer, then worked as an insulator, moved up to lead foreman, lead/foreman, and eventually he became the owner of his own roofing company. Now, he is working with roofing contractors across North America using satellite technology to significantly impact the roofing estimating process. Today, we are going to talk about Matt's background, his early construction days, his path to today, and more about exactly what it is he is doing with Roofer. Matt, welcome to the Blue Collar Voices show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you here. Matt, this thing started. I'd like to know how you got into construction. What led to you working as a roofer back in 2001?
Well, back in 2000, I had met a girl. And usually that's how all good stories start, with I met a girl.
Exactly.
At that time, I was kind of in between jobs. I had worked at a chocolate factory, just kind of bouncing around. It was the late 90s in Ontario, Canada. The economy wasn't so good. And my girlfriend's dad at the time was a third generation roofer with an industrial flat roofing company out of Peterborough, Ontario. So he actually got me a job working with him. And my first job back then was at $8 an hour, which was pretty good money for Ontario at that time. And my job was to stand in the garbage bin and stack up the materials as they tossed them down so we could make sure that we got the most material in the bin. So I got covered with pitch and insulation, and my eyes were swollen shut. And it was,
wow.
If there's hell on earth, that was it. But the company did that on purpose, because if you could make it through that job, then you could make it through the rest of roofing, because roofing's not an easy job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I started doing that and literally worked my way up the ladder. So after working, you know, I learned different types of flat roofing. I learned how to do hot asphalt and EPDM, cold pros roofing. And on the side, my father-in-law was shingling. So he'd take me out on the weekends and teach me how to shingle. I was basically just running bundles up the ladder for him and laying them out on the roof so he could access them quickly. You know, just starting out as a laborer, I was about 22 years old at the time. So I wasn't a kid. But I wasn't in shape, having not really worked that hard before, just done factory work. So running up and down the ladder with bundles was killer.
Yes.
And there were days when I woke up in the morning and I thought to myself, man, I wish I'd stayed in school. But, you know, I stuck with it. I learned all the ins and outs through my father-in-law, my ex-father-in-law now. He taught me so much about the entire roofing industry. So I worked with that company right up till 2004. And then I started working. That company actually, it closed down. The owner, who was my girlfriend's grandfather, he had passed away and the company had changed hands and they didn't manage it properly. So it went under. So I ended up working for, I ended up working for another company.
At that company.
Yeah.
And your LinkedIn profile, and I do most of my connections with LinkedIn,
yeah.
But your LinkedIn profile shows you learned a lot of different skills in those 3 years, which you mentioned as well.
Yeah.
How much of that was you driving yourself to learn those different skills versus like your father-in-law was helping teach you things? How much did he push you? How much did the company push you to say, we want to make sure that you're well-rounded? I guess what I'm getting at is, you learned a lot of different things. How much responsibility did you take? And was it your impetus versus the company driving you to learn these skills?
Yeah, sure. I think it's a mixture of everything. The company, they didn't really push a lot. It was more up to my father. Like, he was also the foreman and he pushed me. I always wanted to be the best. Like, I'm very competitive in that way. So
sure.
I try to learn as fast as I can. And do the best job that I can. I treated every building like it was my own building, every home like it was my own home. I made sure everything was spotlessly clean when I was cleaning up the ground, you know, being a laborer.
Right.
And
right.
I pushed myself to be the best because I wanted to climb the ladder quickly. And I didn't want my father-in-law to, you know, shoot me for dating his daughter. So
I could also see that you have that added element that you wanted him to be, you know, very pleased and proud of you, not necessarily to shoot you, but just have say, yes, that is my son-in-law instead of, yeah, that's my son-in-law.
Yeah, exactly. And I grew up, I didn't have a father. Like I was raised mostly by my mom, my sister and my aunts. And so not having a dad, I've never really had anybody to prove myself to look down and say, good work, son. So he became that to me.
Awesome.
And that really pushed me.
So you learned all these different skills, and according to many numbers, blue-collar tradesmen are harder to find today than it used to be, and you know, even way back in the day, that's all we had. But at this particular point in time, when you took on this construction job, were you seeing up in Ontario, from your experiences, that it was harder to find people to do that kind of work then as much as it is now?
I think it was easier then. My generation, like I'm 42 years old now. That generation back when I was in my 20s, we weren't afraid of hard work. You know, we didn't push for $15 an hour minimum wages or anything like that. We just showed up for work, got our paycheck. If we needed more money, we worked longer hours. That's just how it was back then. You know, so it's today it's a lot. The market here, like it's hard to find roofers. It's hard to find any trade in Ontario these days. You know, there's like almost like a sense of entitlement in the younger generations that I'm not saying that across the board for all younger people, but that's just a sense that you get that, that the hard work, they don't want the money for the hard work. They want easy work, easy money. So back then it was a little bit like we were constantly hiring. We had guys show up on the job site and they'd spend a day roofing. And not even a day. They'd work for half a day. They'd be on the roof and they'd say, hey, I just got to run down the ladder, go to the washroom. They'd run down the ladder, never see him again. Wouldn't even show up to get their half a day's paycheck. And wow. That happened quite a few times. Yeah. So it is very hard work. You know, we have very cold winters and very hot summers. So it's not for the faint of heart. That's for sure.
Now, Ontario, you're right there near Niagara Falls, right?
Yeah, right near Niagara Falls. Yep.
Okay. I've been there and it was an interesting experience just because, well, you know, all the government signs are slightly different and, you know, there's just a different way of approaching things, but it was just beautiful country. I was driving around. I just thought, man, this is great.
Oh yeah.
But it does get cold. I mean, obviously, cause I was at Niagara Falls during the winter. And everything's just iced up and frozen, gorgeous as could be. But man, was it cold.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And, I remember being out doing roofs out in minus 40.
Well, that was going to be my next question, if you're actually roofing in that kind of weather.
Yeah, and we mostly did we'd do the hot asphalt, the built-up roofing. We wouldn't get too much into shingling because you could blow right through the shingles. And
sure.
And same with trying to do the EPDM. You gotta glue your membrane and glue your substrate and then the glue would freeze rather than dry. It's a plastic cement. It's got to dry before it bonds and it wouldn't dry. It would just get a layer of frost over it. So you really can't do that in the winter.
When you say, what was the word EP? Say it again.
EPDM. It's a rubber membrane. It's like it's almost like a car inner tube tire, but it's thicker. It's hard to explain. It's called an elastomeric polymer DM membrane. It's a single ply. You tear off the old roof, you lay down some insulation, the insulation or the plywood, whatever gets fastened down. You glue the substrate, which is your roof deck, and then you fold back the rubber, you glue the rubber, you wait for it to dry, and then you mate the two together, and it creates a bond. And the roof basically becomes a swimming pool.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. You put drains on it so it doesn't become a swimming pool, but that's the idea, is that it's watertight. That's the 5-second EPDM lesson for today.
All right. Well, we might have another one. We don't know.
Yeah.
So today, you know, you had mentioned the fact that it is harder to find personnel today.
Yeah.
And they're wanting more money.
Yeah.
I see that as supply and demand. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot of people are saying that I can spend my time and energy and I can learn this skill and make this kind of money, or mm-hmm. I can go learn this skill and I have to work harder. I would like at least to be paid the same, considering the fact that I'm exerting more force, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. And in Ontario, like we have a $14 an hour minimum wage, and that's on par to go up to $15 an hour. So I think the biggest issue isn't the pay for the money. Like you can go to a coffee shop and the coffee barista is making $15 an hour. But then the base wage for a laborer in construction has to start at $20 an hour. Then the dude that's been there for 5 years, who's already making $20 an hour, has to get $25 an hour, you know, and you slowly got to step that up. And then next thing you know, a roof that was $3,000 is now costing $5,000. So the cost of living and the expenses just went up. So it's very tough. It's very tough.
Well, how much of that?
Go ahead. That's basically when I had my own business. I had my own roofing company for 3 years, and that was the biggest issue, was the rise of wages and taxation and regulation. Like we're pretty well regulated in Ontario as well, and taxes aren't the lowest here either. So I ended up closing my doors just because of the amount it was costing just to keep. I was barely making any money at the end of the day, trying to compete with some of the bigger businesses.
Awesome. And I have further questions about when you had your business in mm-hmm. in my notes.
Yeah.
Is wages a substantial cost aspect? I mean, you know, if the wages go up, you say the roof has to go up.
Yeah.
Is it just not diminishing your profit? Is it almost making it unprofitable?
Yeah, very much so. Because when wages go up, we also have unemployment insurance, Canada Pension Plan, the income tax, and when employee pays that, we take it out of their paycheck, but then the employer has to match it.
Right.
So if the employee is paying, you know, $150 a week in taxes and EI, unemployment insurance and Canada Pension Plan and all our other wonderful socialist ventures that we have up here, the employer has to match those payments and in some case even double those payments to the government. So all the expenses go up that you don't even see. So it's very deadly.
I can understand that completely.
Yeah. So it's very hard for new startups. It's very hard for new startups, especially. And you don't really turn a profit for the first 5 years. And when you go for small business counseling, they'll tell you that most companies fail in the first 3 years and don't profit for the first 5 years.
That is harsh.
Yeah.
You spent the time there at working as a roofer. And then you moved on to working with insulation. Mm-hmm. And my question was, what led to this move? But apparently it's because the business closed, the roofing company closed. So you had to find something else.
Well, it's actually, I was still roofing while doing insulation. The thing was in the winter, the roofing aspect, you know, it slows down. And if it was completely dead, there was no roofing, we would get laid off. But in the winter, the insulation industry picks up because everybody wants to get their attics insulated in the winter. So I would go and roof during the summer and then I would do insulation during the winter.
Okay.
So like I was working for Feeney Roofing. After the first company I was working for shut down, the owner that had passed away, his brother had a roofing company, and I went and worked for that roofing company while I was doing the insulation.
Okay.
So I was working for two separate companies. Yeah.
Working your ass off. As much as possible.
Oh, yeah. That's the way it goes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you worked 9 years with Feeney Roofing, and you assisted with estimating. You also performed foreman duties. Mm-hmm. What are some things you learned in this position that really impacted you?
I learned how to properly measure and price roofs, how to source material, how to go in the attic and do attic inspections, look for dry rot, all that wonderful stuff, damaged plywood. And I learned how to do a full roofing system inspection from the ceiling right to the ridge. Whereas before, you know, I was an installer. I knew how to install the products on the roof, but I didn't really know what was happening underneath. So mm-hmm. Working at Feeney Roofing, that was the one from 2004 to 2013. That taught me a lot about the entire roofing system. It's the ventilation, your insulation, your roofing materials, waterproofing, even eaves trough, soffit and fascia. I learned a lot there on the residential side. That was more residential and commercial, whereas the place I was working before was more industrial, like doing big factories. And yeah.
Talking about thousands and thousands of square feet of roof.
Yeah, yeah. I miss those days. Boy, they were nice.
So as we're taking that little topic, why did you like those days better? What about it made it so awesome?
I just like going to, you know, a 20,000 square foot warehouse that's a new construction and just seeing, it's like a blank canvas just waiting for somebody to paint it, right? And right. You lay up the insulation. It was the camaraderie. We had a fantastic crew. We all worked together. We all worked like a machine. We all had a role. We all worked together, and it was just a really good time.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At the time at Feeney, if you had to take the one takeaway, the one thing that you'd say, this is like the most impactful thing I learned, what would that be?
I think for the roofing side of it, I think that would be to treat every single home like it's your own. Like that was drilled into us there. From the personal aspect of it, I learned don't drink and drive, because there was a lot of roofers that we had working for us that were alcoholics, myself included. I've been sober now for 9 years. And
well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. But yeah, I learned that the hard way, don't drink and drive. I didn't hurt anybody. I ended up getting behind the wheel and just falling asleep and putting my truck in the ditch. But that was a game changer for me. That was a game changer for sure.
Like a wake up call.
Yeah, 100%. And I had a guy, a roofer that was a good friend. He was an alcoholic as well. He actually died of liver failure. So I learned a lot about myself working there, just seeing how older generations of roofers who had been abusing their bodies their whole life, I was starting to head down that path and I didn't want to. So that was very impactful for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Having done a stint as a roofer and finding it very brutal, it's you're beating up your body and you need to make sure that you keep it healthy by giving it all the necessary nutrition and not impacting it negatively that you can. Otherwise, you are just going to tear it down and it doesn't have the chance to rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, with roofers, if you get a sore back, you get sore knees, you want a quick fix so you can get back up on the roof. So roofers end up getting addicted to opioids and alcohol.
Really?
And it's an epidemic in the roofing industry.
And it's not just a personnel type that would succumb to this. It's because they're trying to satisfy that need to get rid of the pain.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. Yeah.
Interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, again, that's not across the board. That's not every roofer, but, in my experience, especially in the more rural areas, it's not so much in the more urban centers. Like I knew a few roofers from the city and they'd see us as like us out in the rural areas as like, backwoods hillbilly types. Right. So,
right.
So it's, yeah.
Well, there's probably a nugget of truth to that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's a negative. I love the rural. I'll be honest. I'm 100%. Not a big city fan.
No, me either. No, I said to my wife, I'd like, someday I want to live out in the country on a lake, but I want to own a condo in Toronto, and the condo in Toronto will be my cottage where I go to Toronto for a couple of weeks just to remind myself how much I hate it. And then I can go back to my house.
Exactly.
Out in the country.
That's right. Hey, I'm like, I want to be alone on a mountain in a little cabin with high speed internet. And that's a tough combination.
Yeah. solar panels off the grid living.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That's my dream.
So in 2014, you owned Bumblebee Roofing. And is this a company you started yourself from scratch?
Yep, right from scratch. And I did really well for myself. Like it was a blast. But from my background, not growing up, I'm a high school dropout. I dropped out halfway through grade 10. Growing up without a dad, I had no idea how to handle finances. I just knew how to do roofs.
Sure.
And I did not know the extent of what I was getting into with all the government legislation, the taxes, the workers' compensation. It just started to pile up and I fell behind with my payments to the government. I was paying everybody else. I just don't like the, I don't like the government. I'm going to be straight up with you. I do not like government.
I love your attitude.
Yeah. So they were always the last one to get paid, but they were always the first ones to come after you for the pay.
Sure.
And so I ended up falling behind in my taxes. And one day I woke up and the Canada Revenue Agency, which is like our version of the IRS, I had woke up and they had gone into my bank account and just taken what I owed them. And that bankrupted me. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that, but I understand.
Yeah. I had a couple of customer deposits in there and money for materials for like five or six roofs that I had lined up. And I was just sunk.
That's harsh.
Yeah, it is harsh. It's my own fault for not doing the research. I tried to handle the company all my own, tried to do all my own bookkeeping and sales and estimating and installing instead of delegating that to people who were more qualified in those areas. So it was a huge learning experience for me. Huge learning curve. I ended up taking financial courses and reading books by Dave Ramsey. Yes. and Grant Cardone and you know, just learning how to handle my finances properly. So it's my whole life is like every experience that I've had has been a learning experience. It's been a bad experience, but it's also there's been good that's come out of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
My question that I had to follow up to this was what aspect or aspects of running this company really stood out? And I mean, there's the mix. There's the disregarding the finances, there's just the proper construction and dealing with customers and doing the work. And then, of course, there's all the financial stuff that you pointed out.
Yeah.
Combining both of those, tell me a couple of things that you would say are significant about running a company and to be mindful of.
I think that the most significant thing is to try not to take on everything yourself. Like I said, I was trying to do the bookkeeping, the customer services, the sales, the installations, estimates, supervising my crew. You know, my big takeaway from that was don't spread yourself out too thin. You try to delegate those different areas to the people who are more qualified. You know, I loved owning my own business. I learned a lot about myself in that, and I learned both strengths and weaknesses. I found out that I'm a great salesman. I can sell anything. And I really enjoyed that, the interactions with the people, going to their homes and talking to them and learning about them and learning, listening to their story. And I absolutely loved that aspect of it. So I learned a lot about myself because I was kind of an introvert before that.
Right.
I didn't really talk to people. I didn't, unless I was drinking. That was the only way I could get out and socialize. So having been at that point, 2014, I had already been sober for 3 years. I hadn't quite learned how to socialize without alcohol. So that aspect of being a sales rep and getting into people's homes and talking to them really brought out who I was inside without needing alcohol to help me do that.
It's interesting that you were able to do all of those other jobs in your career, performing all of those things and still not needing the higher level of socialization.
Mm-hmm.
And that your business really, really brought that to the forefront.
Yeah. Well, I'm also a believer now. I'm a Christian man too. And I believe that everything that I've been through in my whole life, God has been there carrying me and pointing out, listen, you need to learn from this and grow and get onto the next part and then learn from that and grow. And everything that I've done my whole life has brought me right up to where I am with Roofer right now.
Okay. Okay. The last two jobs on your LinkedIn profile, the second to last, you were a client service specialist, and it seems like you were really deep into the whole, you know, quoting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure by this point, you were simply honing your skills. From that particular position, what's an important observation you have when you were working in that, you know, that second to last job?
The client service specialist at Mr. Roof Repair, that was a totally different thing for me because that was all online. So when I started in that role, I basically worked from home. The roofer would go out and look at the roof and do a repair because we were a repair service. And while he was doing the repair, would take a bunch of pictures of the rest of the roof and send those pictures back to me. And I would compile, we would compile an assessment report, assess the entire roof, point out where the deficiencies are. And any of the deficiencies, I would quote on them. The quote would get emailed to the client with a link that they could do a screen share. And I would walk them through the quote online. So I never had to leave my desk.
Okay.
and I for that job, I learned the technical aspect of online screen sharing and emailing clients. I learned different computer programs and learned how to use different CRMs and stuff. I didn't even know what a CRM was before that. You know, I still don't even know what it stands for, but I know that it has something to do with sales.
Yes.
It's client management, right? So that was a great job. And unfortunately, they ended up having to lay people off. And it was just a bad year all around last year for roofing in Canada. In Ontario, I don't know about all of Canada, but in Ontario, it was just a bad year.
What made it so bad?
The weather. The year before that, we had a lot of windstorms and we've been getting that, you know, the rain and wind and everything. So it was actually quite a prosperous year. This year, I don't know if it was because we had an election. Election years tend to be a little bit slower because people are worried about what the new government's going to bring in. And yeah, it was just a bad year. And I've heard that from quite a few roofing companies that they had a bad year. A lot of them don't know exactly why it was so bad, but you just weren't getting the sales. So. But lucky for me, you know, I was already working for roofer on the side, just as like a independent sales rep, just doing part-time sales for them as kind of a side hustle. Mm-hmm. So I already had that once Mr. Roof Repair laid me off, you know, I was ready to go full-time with roofer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You were working for roofer on the side. What led you to wanting to work for roofer?
Just their vision. I love tech. I've always been a tech nerd. Like I love computers. I've always played around with computers right back. I think our first computer was in 1987. We had an old Commodore 64 and I learned how to like write C++ code back then. And I was just always
very good.
Even though, yeah, I don't remember any of that now. I got out of that and I probably killed those brain cells over the years, but I learned how to, once the internet came around in the 90s, I started to learn how to write HTML and do web design. And I've always been a tech nerd. So when this company came in that combined roofing with tech, it was like the Lord had sent down a beam of light and there was angels and it was like, whoa. And yeah, it was just like, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. And then I went and did some research on the company and read the vision of the CEO, Richard. And he's a third generation roofer. So it's, you know, the company is all roofers. His vision was to bring some accountability into the roofing industry and create this giant North American marketplace where we get roofers on board with the roofer website and we connect contractors with homeowners all across the country. And I thought that was just absolutely amazing.
Okay. Well, my last question was just, and you've already started it, and that's great. Mm-hmm. It was tell me about roofer and what you're doing. And so the floor is wide open. So share away. So I'd like you to tell, you know, what it is that you do and, you know, the innovative things that are happening and how your years of experience actually come into play. And so just the floor is open, man. Just talk away.
Okay. So I started with roofer.com back in September, just part-time. When I started out, my role was to educate roofers on how to use the satellite imaging. We have a measurement software where we can use either a satellite image or a low-flying airplane image that zooms in on the person's house, and you can point and click on all the areas of the home. You can measure the roof, calculate the pitch, and it prints off a full 8-page report on the home. It gives you all the dimensions. It gives you the eaves measurements, the rakes, the hips, ridges, wall flashing, step flashings, you name it. And it's very, very detailed. So I started selling that part-time. I didn't get too much into it because at that time I was still working for Mr. Roof Repair. It was the peak of the busy season in Ontario from about September right up until Christmas. So I spent that time just learning about the roofer system. just last week, I started with the other products that Roofer has. And what that is they offer contractor business loans as well as consumer loans for if a homeowner needs a roof and they don't have the money, we'll actually finance it for them. I present that to roofers that's available. But the biggest thing is getting the contractors to sign up to the roofing network. And that's my biggest role right now is to reach out to contractors. My main areas that I'm reaching out to right now are Ontario and Florida. And we're going to be expanding that marketplace across the entire Eastern Seaboard eventually. But right now, my focus is Florida and Ontario to get roofers to sign on to the marketplace, educate them on what we do, how we're bringing consumers and roofers together. We're making sure that roofers are fully vetted. They have workers' compensation. They have insurance. In Florida, you need a roofing license and making sure that they have a few years experience so that homeowners aren't getting just some dude with a truck with no insurance or anything like that. That's the liability. So we want to make sure that the roofing marketplace, roofers that are competing against each other are competing against other vetted, legitimate contractors. So that's the main goal. And the vision that Richard brought, using the technology, using artificial intelligence and satellite imaging, it's just absolutely amazing. I still don't even comprehend it 100%. I'm still learning, but the more I learn, the more I love it. It's really amazing.
So what's the benefit to a contractor? Like if I'm doing roofing, what's in it for me?
Well, more leads. Like we can handle the a lot of the advertising. So what happens is we'll take an area, say Orlando, Florida, and we'll be pumping out advertising there through Facebook and online marketing and Google Ads and you name it. So that cuts a lot of the cost for contractors to have to spend money on advertising. That's a huge, huge budget for a lot of contractors. And I know some contractors are paying up to $70, $80 a lead. And for us, you know, it's free. It's absolutely free. There's no cost until the contractor sells a job. And then we take a commission off of that. It's a 10% commission. But we can send you out leads. And as long as you're doing quotes, there's no cost to it. So the amount of money that you pay to roofer for the lead, once you've got the job, you've already saved that money on advertising. If you're using our satellite imaging software, you're saving money on driving out to the job and running around on the roof with a tape measure. That's the cost of fuels going up. With up in Ontario and Canada, we're getting carbon taxes. So our cost of fuel is going up. I think it would be probably close to, if I was going by American standards, it'd be close to probably $5 a gallon. It's expensive to drive out to a roof, get up on a roof. You have to, in Ontario, put your safety harness on and put an anchor in the roof. Otherwise, you can get a fine by the safety inspector if he catches you up there measuring a roof without being tied off. So there's a lot of expenses just to measure a roof that you don't even know you're going to get. So our platform eliminates a lot of those expenses and gives you more time to do installing rather than doing the measuring and the quoting. We also have full-time project managers that talk to the clients for you and educate them on the type of roofing systems you install. And that is a huge benefit too. So the sales reps aren't spending so much time on the education aspect of the roofing part. They still talk to the clients to sell the job. The clients are already educated by the time the sales rep gets to them.
Okay. What is the accuracy like, you know, to the 10th, to a quarter of an inch, to a 16th of an inch, to an inch? What's the accuracy of your satellite measuring?
That's the first question I had when I started back in September. So the first thing I did was I went up on my roof and I measured it all out. And when I was all done, the roofer measurement was off by 10 square feet. So it was off by 10 square feet, but it was over. So it wasn't under. So even still, like if 10 square feet is not a lot, but even if it was, it's not like I would have been out material. It is extremely accurate. I would say close to 99% accurate.
Okay.
And I've measured a lot of roofs with it. When I was working at Mr. Roof Repair, I was using the roofer software to measure roofs, and it was phenomenal.
And so you say you use satellite and low flying. I mean, do you ever use drones?
People can actually take their own drone and hover it over a roof, snap a picture, and then upload the picture to the roofer software and use the measuring tool on their own photo. You can take a picture of, if you have blueprints, you can upload the blueprints to the software, and you can measure it out on the blueprints as well using the measurement software. It's pretty amazing.
It does sound like it. How does it actually get scale? Because if it's taking a picture and it sees it's a rectangle, how does it know that rectangle is 37 feet? I don't know how, just say it's 37 feet by 60 feet. Mm-hmm. How does it know that versus some other similar length and width that corresponds to that? How does it get its size? How does it know the scale?
With the satellite imaging and the low-flying airplane imaging, we have artificial intelligence that knows the scale. Even when a homeowner comes to the roofer website and they need a new roof, they type in their address. Artificial intelligence will take a picture of their roof and spit them out a quote within 30 seconds of them even putting in their address. So we have artificial intelligence that can scale the roof. If you upload your own drone pictures and upload your own blueprints, you can actually set the scale yourself if you need to.
I could see that, let's say if it's a shingle roof, shingles have a typical set length, mm-hmm. and all of then it can see the separations and it can calculate based on that.
Yeah.
Because it's not just a box defining a rectangular space. There's a lot of cues that could be used.
Yeah, that's right. So when you do a roof measurement, you add all those points in. So you're going to go around the entire perimeter, go around the entire eaves. Then you're going to go up the hips and across the ridges, draw lines on all these different sections and segments. And then you go to the next tab and then you point and click on exactly what those segments are. And you can label them eaves, hips, ridges, rakes. It calculates all that stuff, all that information for you in the report.
Excellent. That's pretty cool.
And usually what I do is when somebody signs up, I send them a quick email. I've got a promotional video that I made showing me doing a roofer measurement so that they can see exactly how I do it. And if they have any questions, then I can do a screen share with them and I walk them through the process, how it's done. And it's a lot easier to show somebody than it is to try to explain it.
Sure. Considering the whole package of everything that you have, mm-hmm. that you've described, that would seem to me the sticking point that most people, for me as well, would be, how accurate is it? Because if you've got the accuracy down, yeah. everything else makes sense.
100%. Yeah. And there are so many other roof measurement apps out there. And to me, like the one I've used quite a few of them being in the roofing industry. And this one, by far, I was using it before I even worked for them. And I loved it so much. That's when I messaged the CEO through LinkedIn and was like, hey, I see they had the name Roofer and in brackets, we're hiring. And they still have that up there, I think. Mm-hmm. I was like, you're hiring. What are you hiring for? I love your measurement tool. I want part of this. So, it's amazing, amazing software, very accurate and very, very clear imaging. That's the main thing, because a lot of the software you get, the images are pixelated or they're blurry. This one here, you have different options for imaging. There's you can use the free service, which uses Bing images. Bing images are very clear in urban areas, but when you get out to rural areas, they can be a little bit blurry and pixelated. But for like $2 an image, you can upgrade to a more clear, crystal clear image. So it's very cheap, like $2 is the cost of a cup of coffee. So other services that you're going to send them $60 or $70 to generate the report for you, and then you're going to get that report back, do your quote, but you're not guaranteed that client is going to go with you. So you just spent $60 on a report that you're just going to throw in the garbage because they went with another roofer. Here you either spend nothing or you spend $2 and you're just out the amount of a cup of coffee. So it's a great platform.
Which sounds to me like the roofer company subscribes to service that gives them high definition satellite images.
100% high definition everything. We want to bring quality to the roofing industry.
How would you describe your role exactly?
So my role is I'm the contractor network account executive. I'm reaching out to roofers. I use various social media platforms. I'm a guru with LinkedIn and Facebook. I have my own Facebook page. It's called Matt the Roofer. If anybody wants to like my page, go ahead. But yeah, I reach out to roofers all over the place. I send them messages. I give them phone calls. I explain the platform to them, explain what we're offering, and get them to sign up. What I do is I do a screen share, not just with the measuring tool, but also if they sign up for the leads, I share my screen and I walk them through the sign up process, how to upload a quote to our platform, when they get a lead, what they do, how to show the clients that we have financing available. I walk them through every single aspect of it. So nobody's signing up to our website and then sitting there saying, what do I do now? We are here 100% of the time. For me, it's for the contractors. There's other guys that handle the client side of it, but I'm here 100% for roofers to help them to grow their business. I don't know if you've heard about the retail apocalypse.
I have.
Yeah, the retail apocalypse. So Amazon and other online drop shipping companies are basically burying the retail industry. And it's projected that through Uber Eats and online ordering, that's eventually going to happen to the fast food industry. So the trades industries aren't that far behind. With government getting bigger and government regulations getting crazy, people don't know who to trust anymore. Like a lot of, in Ontario, a lot of the regulations here are geared more to protecting the government and the insurance companies than they are homeowners and roofers. So we are just kind of creating a community for roofers and clients to come together where they know that they can trust each other. And that's huge in an ever-changing market. You know, I educate roofers, like, listen, the way it was done 30, 40, 50 years ago, it's not going to be like that in the future. You got to get on board to an online marketplace, or else the next thing you know, you're going to be like the Macy's department stores and the Zellers and Kmart's and all these other big businesses that are just going under because they're not getting online.
I always like to play devil's advocate.
Oh, yeah.
But I can absolutely see what you're saying with regard to getting online.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to sign up with Roofer in order to take advantage of the online communication and running fakes. You're facilitating it so that they don't have to worry about that. But if they have their own expertise, or if they're sufficiently a large enough company that they can have their own department to actually handle all of that,
yeah,
they can make that happen. But I do agree that it's difficult. I mean, there's no more Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
There's no more taking an ad out in the newspaper. And so it does need to be online, and you can waste a crap load of money if you don't do it right.
That's right. That's right. So we're trying to eliminate that. Like, there's some roofers that are spending a fortune on online advertising, but not seeing any results. You know, it's like a lot of roofers I talk to, they don't know tech. They know roofing. They don't know computers. They don't know technology. So we want to help those roofers get online, get with the technical aspect. I know there are tons of roofing companies out there that they have their own tech teams, they have their own online presence, and they're not interested in the roofer dashboard and the roofer program. They might have individual sales reps within their companies that sign up with us, but for the most part, we have the mid-sized roofing companies are the ones that come to us the most.
Do you offer a plan for companies that may not need all of those services? They just want to use your ability to, you know, with the satellite technology to be able to generate better proposals?
It's all free. There's no plan. Everything is absolutely free. You only pay. The only time we make money is if you upgrade, you buy a $2 image, or if you get a lead and you close a deal, and then we get a 10% commission. So everything's free. There's no cost. There's no risk. Roofers can sign up. If they don't like it, they haven't spent any money. They don't spend any money until they start to make money.
So I could go right now as a non-roofer, I could go create an account, log in.
Yeah, it's 100% free. That's awesome. And that's what we're trying to do is we want to bring roofers in, and we want to show them that we aren't out there to try and take your money. We're out there to try to make you money. Once you start to make money, then we start to make money. But we want you to make money first. That's our first 100% priority.
Sure. That's fantastic. You're given the service, a primary service that's useful,
yeah,
away for free. They can add services,
yeah,
if,
yeah,
they want. And like the higher photos. And then you also mentioned the fact that you have the referral network,
yeah,
to help them find leads, which would be a paid service.
No, it's all free. Like the leads, we give you leads. It's all free. They're all free leads. Every lead that we give you is free until you close the job. Say we give you 10 leads, all free. And out of those leads, you sell one of those roofs, and your competitors, you know, they sell the other ones. You sell that one roof, you get paid. Once you get paid, we actually collect payment for you and deposit it right in your bank account. So we also eliminate credit card fees, so you don't have to pay those, but we take our 10% off the top. And that's it.
I was wondering how you ensured the fact you got your 10%. Now I know the answer.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the biggest questions that I have is from roofers is, well, What stops roofing companies from getting the lead off your service and then calling up the customer and saying, hey, I'm Joe Blow from Joe Blow's Roofing. I hear you need a roof. The answer to that is just trust and accountability.
Right.
If we, roofers, first of all, roofers love us and we haven't had that happen. But if you bite the hands that feeds you, then the hand stops feeding you.
Absolutely.
And like we have such high technology and we have ways of finding out if you're taking the leads that we send you and then going behind our back and selling those jobs without using the roofer platform. And then you're kicked off the platform and it's...
Absolutely. And that's fair.
We haven't had an issue with that yet. That's just a top question that, that contractors, that roofers ask me.
And I can see they may get away with one, but you start noticing a trend. You know, you're like, okay, we got a problem. And I'm a big believer in giving people enough rope to hang themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first off, I typically don't trust anybody 100%, but you can't act like that. You can't say, you know, you can't, if you take the position with somebody you're working with and you're already displaying that you don't trust them, it's not going to work out. So you have to trust, but you have to verify, like Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I think the service that you're offering sounds pretty cool and it'd be very beneficial. I like the whole scope. So where do you see yourself going? I mean, you're working, doing what you're doing now. Where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
Honestly, I just go wherever the Lord puts me at this point. I see myself still with Roofer and still with this company, but this company is ever growing and ever changing and is an ever expanding market. So the sky's the limit. I plan on staying with Roofer now. I'm 42 years old. And if I ever retire, I want to retire with this company.
Okay.
And as far as being still in Ontario, I don't know, because we have an office in San Francisco and they say it's like 12 to 15 degrees Celsius there all year round. And that sounds pretty sweet.
Well, there's a few drawbacks if you've been watching the news.
Yeah. I know. I see it. It's the same in Toronto and most big city areas. I think Ontario and California are kind of like sisters. I don't know what they call it, like sister states or something like that. But yeah.
Interesting.
They're very, very, very similar government. They're not so much anymore, but they were very similarly governed. We had a liberal government that is no longer in place now. But it was very, very similar market. You know, I actually heard Grant Cardone. I listen to him quite a bit. He's very knowledgeable, but he's also quite funny. And he was living in California, and he said that the tax rate there was 10%, and they put it up to 13%. And the first thing he did was move to Miami. And everybody was saying, well, that's only a 3% increase. That's not a whole lot. And he said, no, 10 to 13%, that's not a 3% increase. That's a 33.3% increase in my taxes. So he was like, I made like a library and I booked it out of there.
And he probably, if it's 10% in California, it's less than that in Florida.
Yeah, definitely.
And so he saw it was just that differential that drove him over the edge.
Yeah, but that's what happens is you know, you get these governments that come in with all these promises and they say they're going to tax the rich and tax the rich to pay for all these promises they made, and then the tax are like, yeah, no, and they leave, and then who ends up with the bill is the middle class. You got your roofing contractors and your drywallers and the tradesmen and all the hardworking blue collar guys that are out there trying to feed their families. They end up paying the bill for these broken promises that these politicians have made. So it's just a broken system.
And the typical rich person doesn't, I'm not talking about like Bernie Madoff, who, you know, was the Ponzi scheme. Mm-hmm. I may not have said his name correctly, but the typical rich person doesn't get there without providing services that people gladly paid for along the way.
Exactly. And like Grant Cardone says, is the more money you have, the more people you can help. And the thing is, the only people who complain about money are the people who don't have any. So, and that group is getting louder and louder and louder, right? So my goal as a personally, like I have a wife and I have four kids. One of those is from my previous girlfriend who had my roofing father-in-law. He lives with his mom, but I have three kids now, 42 years old. My youngest kid is 8 months old. So I got mouths to feed.
Sure.
And, but my goal is to make as much money as I can. not because I want to have a big fancy house and lots of cars, but because the more money I make, the more I can help people. I can have a decent sized house, but then I can hire someone from my local church to come and clean it. I can hire local kids to come and mow my lawn, and I can spread that wealth around. And that should be the goal of people who earn money and make a lot of money. Taxing the rich just makes it so that the rich can't help as many people. The government doesn't help people. They just take their money and they spend it frivolously on nonsense. So, you know, calling for the government to tax the rich in order to help the poor is backwards, because taxing the rich is actually creating more poor people.
I think that if the government gets out of the way and let people do what people want to do, we'd be a lot better off.
Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, the government's, that could be a whole other podcast. I was involved in politics in Ontario for a little while, and now I absolutely want nothing to do with it. It's so corrupt. The sad thing with politics in Canada is we really don't have a good grassroots political party anymore. They all have an agenda. The big voting point for me would be for us to go back to interest-free borrowing from the Bank of Canada and to stop selling our debt to foreign holders of treasury. Like, let's keep our money in Canada, stop borrowing from corporations, from foreign lenders at interest to pay for our like, we have healthcare up here, we have public education, and like, let's pay for that in our own country.
So moving forwards, you talked about how the trades are going to change a little bit going forwards with the needing to embrace the technology of the internet and things like this. But what about, what do you think about the whole blue collar trades to begin with? We're seeing we're starting to see a pushback against the necessity for college and tech.
Yeah.
We're years away from having all the tradespeople that we need, but we have a population almost all across different countries that are aging. We don't have the population increase. We have a decrease in our population and the young people. So we have a lesser percentage of a lesser number of people to fill these roles. I see wages continuing to rise for blue collar myself, going forward for the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah, 100%. And as far as I'm concerned, to encourage more people to get into the trades, there needs to be an incentive. And if the wages aren't matching the hard work, like I said, we have a $15 an hour minimum wage here. If you're going to start somebody as a roofing laborer for 15 bucks an hour, but they can go work at your local coffee shop for 15 bucks an hour, what are they going to do? Are they going to slug bundles up a ladder? Or are they going to stand in an air-conditioned coffee shop for 8 hours a day? They're not going to roof. That's 100%. So with our platform and cutting a lot of the costs for advertising and fuel and even hourly wages for running around on the roof doing measurements, that's money that they could actually take to put back into wages to pay their guys a lot better, you know, and give people more of an incentive to want to get into the trades. So we want to get rid of a lot of the wasted expenses that roofers aren't seeing any return on their investment. And that's primarily in advertising, especially online advertising. We want to take that away, that cost away. At the same time, I think it would be really smart for governments to get, you know, give an incentive to get people into trade schools, like give them a tax cut for going into trade schools, or even pay for it. Like we have public education up here in Canada, public healthcare and stuff. You know, why not give people who are looking to get into trade schools a bit of a discount? You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'd like to see my taxes go more to stuff like that rather than going over to build up other countries. You know, we gotta take care of people in our countries too at the same time.
One of the things that I've noticed is that for some reason, a lot of municipalities have some kind of an association with time on the job equals quality. For instance, you could go in and take a test and pass, say, for instance, to be an electrician. But if you don't have the necessary 4 years as a journeyman and this many years as whatever, they won't issue that license because they want you to have all these years of experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a little bit foolhardy. I think that there's probably some exposure required, but if you can pass a test and you can do the work, why do we have that requirement for so many years of OJT?
Amen. Amen. You know, I've been saying that since high school. I didn't particularly like high school, but I kept saying to my teachers, if I can show up and pass the exams, why do I need to sit in a classroom all day long and listen to you yak? Like, seriously, like it's so backwards. Like, if somebody is skilled and is really good at their job, why do they have to have that 3 or 4 years? Now, it's probably not the same here in Ontario. And roofing, like, you don't need a roofing license or anything like that. People do look at your experience. But that's mainly because you need to have the accountability there. Like, if you have a roofer that's been in business for 6 months, like, even to sign up to the roofer website, we look for roofing contractors that have at least 2 years experience. And the reason for that is because we want to know that you actually have quality work that we can look at, that you have satisfied homeowners. You know, if somebody's been in business for 6 months and has done one roof, we really don't have anything to go by to judge their quality of work before they sign up for the platform.
What about somebody that may have years? Let's just say you have a guy that's been in roofing for 20 years. He started his own company 6 months ago. Do you have that gray area where you actually vet out, do an interview and actually proceed?
Oh, 100%. That's what my job is. Like, if you're a roofing contractor, you've been working for, you know, Jack's Roofing for 25 years. You just decided to go on your own. You've been in business for 6 months. I'm not going to say, oh no, sorry, buddy. You know, it's a case by case basis, which is why I spend, you know, 30 to 60 minutes with each contractor, talking to them, feeling them out. You know, I get an idea of what they've done, where they've been, and what kind of work they've done before we accept them onto the platform.
Right.
Even if I didn't call a roofer, if a roofer hears this podcast and decides he wants to go and sign up to our website, he'll sign up to the website and I'll call him. Like, I'll get notified that he's signed up to the site, and then I'll give him a call and walk him through it. It's almost like a job interview.
Sure. Sure. And the point that I was going to make about that is, for instance, my background was in construction and, you know, doing these types of things. And later I went and got an electronics degree. And then I was working for a company. I got on the internet and got online. And I started digging into things. And I learned everything online, just reading and experimenting and digging into things. And I started my own consulting company. Mm-hmm. But I had no degrees. Nobody knew that. Anybody that walked in just assumed that I was somebody that was just knowledge and expertise. And I did have a lot of knowledge and expertise, but I didn't have anything that was a certification. And if I'd gone to a company and said, hey, I just learned all this stuff online, and especially back then it was even more required that you have degrees.
Yeah.
And they would have been like, sorry, no, you don't qualify.
Yeah.
But when I went out and talked to these companies, I had a company, I did this, they just assumed that I knew what I was talking about, and mm-hmm. I handled them very well. I took care of their needs. But it's the same with roofing or anything. Mm-hmm. You go to work as an employee and you get vetted. Oh my God. They, you know, all this information and what have you done this? And they can be very harsh about saying, you don't have this one thing, you're not suitable.
Yeah.
But if that same person has the drive, they can go start their own company and nobody even cares.
Well, and I'll tell you something too. I've seen guys that have all the education in the world, but don't know their ass from their head. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a piece of paper. Like, they just because they've gone through it in school doesn't mean they know what they're doing. I design websites and stuff on the side too, right? I'm a grade 10 dropout. I don't have no piece of paper or anything like that. But the people who see my websites are like, oh, these are phenomenal. Where'd you go to school? I didn't.
Right.
I sat in front of a computer for a long time and I play a lot of video games. So,
you know, that mindset of digging in and learning and figuring things out, mm-hmm. that's what it takes to be successful in the trades, because
you're not
somebody that's just sitting there. Okay. You're told, here's how you do this and do this and do this and do this. And you're just a cog in the wheel. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen on a job site that it's not in the book. It's not in the specs. You have to account for that. And you have to do it the right freaking way.
Yeah. Like, you show up to do a roof and it looks like a beautiful, you know, easy 6-12 pitch walkable shingle roof. And you get up there and you tear the shingles off and you find rot and mold and wet insulation and there's no ventilation. Like, there's a lot to it that people don't see. You know, it's hidden, like, especially stuff in the attic. But you got to know that stuff. And that knowledge comes from experience. That's not something that you can learn by sitting in a classroom.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, it's really been an interesting conversation with you, and I'm glad you came on. And I'll put in the show notes all the necessary links, but before we go, is there anything else that you've been considering that you want to say?
Now, if anyone listening out there, it doesn't matter what trade you're in, you know, we all have bad days, we all have good days, you know, take the good with the bad, but stay with it, you know, stay true to yourself. When you make a mistake, don't look at it as a failure. Turn it into a success. Learn from it and keep on moving on. Don't get stuck. Don't get depressed. Don't fall into the trap of self-loathing. Just keep growing and keep going.
Those are some awesome words. Yeah. Matt, thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Take care. Hey guys, before you go, two things. The first is, I'm looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show. Basically, I'm looking for those that excel in the blue collar arena and have actually got their hands dirty, truly understanding what it is like to do the work. Now, the second thing, and exciting, hey, at least for me, I am planning a road trip. Phase one is building a list of locations to visit. Some locations will be just a meet and greet. Others will be on-site audio and or video. Please check out the website for more information. I'd love to hear from you. Email me at johnc@bluecollarvoices.com. You can also hit me up on LinkedIn. Thanks all. Looking forward to hearing from you. Blue Collar Voices is produced by John Chapman, and all audio, video, graphics are created and edited by John Chapman. Blue Collar Voices is a DR7 Media production.
I'll be back.